Hi, my name is Dr. Fakhri Shafai, and I am the Research and Evaluation Project Coordinator for AID Canada.
And my name is Nick Denemy. I am a second-year master's student at the University of Alberta.
Hi, everyone. My name is Jessica Baraskwich, and I'm a PhD candidate in the School and Applied Child Psychology program at the University of Calgary.
Hi, everyone. I'm Laurel Ryan. I have a master's in fine arts and dance history and criticism, which is not why I'm here, but I am a student in the Family Engaged Research course, and I have a son. Who has a grown son who has autism, intellectual disability, mood disorder, tic disorder, etc. And that's how I got involved in pediatric clinical research.
Okay, so we're here today to talk about diversity in research. And I think it's important that we start with the fact that most research that is conducted in the world is on quote unquote weird people. And weird is an acronym that stands for white, educated, industrialized, rich, democratic nations. So the vast majority of the research in the world that's been published has been on white people from wealthy areas. So now we're going to talk about how do we make it more diverse. We each decided to take on one type of diversity and really delve into why that particular group of people does not engage as much with research.
Even within weird, we find that it's predominantly, especially in pediatric clinical health research, we find that it's mostly mums who are participating with their children. And I wanted to, I have a husband who is a father of same said child. And he was particularly interested in research and got me interested in research. This was about 25 years plus ago that my son was diagnosed. And at the time, there weren't a lot of dads who were involved in participating in all of the treatments and diagnoses and therapy appointments and this and that and the other. I think that that has continued, but the role of fathers in child rearing even has changed during my lifetime, which is a long time. The role of fathers, you know, has changed. I've seen it since the 60s. Fathers have recently, in the last 30 years, 40 years, become more involved. So there's a possible implicit bias for researchers of a certain age to not even think about fathers. As long as they get a parent, it's all good. There are a few studies that look at the wide swath of types of fathers. So that was, even though many of them may fit into the weird category, they still are not well represented in research published in the English-speaking world. Yeah, so some of the barriers that fathers cite, there was one particularly well-cited study that looked at 300 fathers, most of the fathers said that they just weren't asked. So particularly making sure that your research recruitment doesn't just say parents, because there was a study down under that looked at, oh, well, if we say parents, we'll be fine. But no, you absolutely need to personally, well, not personally, but definitely invite fathers as fathers to participate in the research. Many of the barriers also are that research studies may require a lot of time. And historically, this has meant time off work for males as the major breadwinners. And this is, you know, lots of assumptions, but this is generally maybe an assumption we might be able to make about the weird demographic. And also that pediatric health visits, which is where a lot of people get introduced to research studies, are mostly three quarters of them, they found, attended by the mother alone. So those are just some of the barriers. And then if you start slicing and dicing groups of fathers into different ethnicities, kids who have fathers who are incarcerated, kids who have particular conditions, you know, that's, then you have added barriers to their, to fathers' participation.
Found within the research is that even though the Indigenous population makes up such a large amount of Canada's 30 something million group, they're often not asked to be part of research. And there are several barriers that would be a result of not taking part in the research. And one of them is the history behind this, the relationship between the Indigenous people and the Canadian population. And as many of you know, the Indigenous population has been mistreated for several centuries, even farther back than that. And there have been attempts towards reconciliation. But a big part of being a participant in family-engaged research is the value of trust. And this trust between the Indigenous population and the rest of Canada is not completely there. We're not quite there. And it will take several generations to deserve their trust after how we have treated them in the past. So this is a major barrier in research with the Indigenous population, that they, what we say may not necessarily be taken as like with value, because they may not actually believe that if we say we're going to pay them, they may not actually believe that. Or if we say that they're going to be an equal contributor to the project, or their what they say for the project is going to be taken with equal value, it may not actually be true. And they may think of it as not being true, and they may not actually believe it. So this may result in them not even bothering, because what they're told may not actually happen. And then lastly, another barrier that comes up quite often in the literature is this misunderstanding of culture. The culture of the Indigenous people is such a framework in how they live. And if we're not, and very often researchers don't have the time or resources or interest to take on the task of understanding this culture of the people they are studying. And if you cannot take the time to understand the culture of the participants, you may end up offending them. The language you use may be offensive, or may result in them just not participating at all. And also, it's very interesting, within the Indigenous population, one culture in one Indigenous group may not be the same as someone else. So you do need to take the time to work through all the cultures that you are working with, really do the research, get on their level, and help try and understand where the barriers are so that you can get their valuable information within your research study.
My research was on barriers to family-engaged research in recent immigrants, so newcomers to Canada, and what is it that's preventing them from being a part of these studies. And the ideas of trust and language and time all came up. So I will say that there wasn't a ton of research on this. It was more about what is preventing them from accessing healthcare. But if you're not accessing healthcare, then you're not going to access the research studies that are related to it. So I had to narrow it down a bit. But one of the primary barriers to recent immigrants being part of research is just a lack of knowledge and general confusion about how health services systems work in Canada. So some of the things cited were lengthy wait times and shortage of healthcare workers, especially those who speak the languages of the newcomers to Canada. And then also things like medication costs. We're all contributors to the struggle to be involved in healthcare in the first place, let alone research. Then there are the barriers that are specifically related to challenges with accessing services, even if you do know how the system works. So for instance, access and money for transportation, dealing with weather extremes, language again, and then cultural differences are problematic for many newcomers to Canada. there is a general distrust of researchers who speak different languages. And one of the studies I looked at said that even just speaking to researchers who are of different ethnicities was something that caused some anxiety and distrust in people who were interested in participating, but just they didn't trust the researcher. And so these were all barriers to family participation and research for newcomers to Canada.
Right. And the group that I'm focusing on is those who earn a lower income. So that might be people who are living in poverty or people who are receiving social supports, groups that just generally are of a lower socioeconomic status. And I think something important to point out at this point is that this is a group that really intersects with all of the groups that we've identified so far. And I think as we continue our discussion on this, we'll see the different ways that this kind of weaves into the different groups. But the barriers that I came across in the literature, they're really relevant to, I think, all of the groups that we've identified so far. But some of them are particularly true for those who do have a lower income. So one of the main barriers to participating in research is access. So families might lack awareness or don't know how to go about participating in research. And I think this is something that's likely even more true for when we talk about partnering in research. And then another barrier is time demands and scheduling conflicts. So meeting times are often in the evenings, but this is something that doesn't always work for low-income families. We know that some low-income adults combine part-time jobs or they might work variable hours within each week. So that can be a big preventative factor for being able to plan beyond a few days, and that can make it difficult for them to commit to participation in research. Another barrier is participation concerns. So some people with low incomes have been found to either lack interest in participating or they don't feel that they need the help that the research study might offer. So that's a big thing in this group identified in the literature is denial of the need for help is one of the most common barriers to participating in research, along with other participation concerns like privacy concerns. And then lastly, so demographic barriers, things like language and literacy demands can be a big barrier for participation. So if you have individuals who are unable to read or write or speak English, they might be discouraged from engaging in the research, as well as the competing priorities that this group faces. So we know that they may have multiple jobs leading to different work priorities. They might have family members to take care of, all of those things that make it really difficult to participate and partner in research.